This audio was captured on March 16th, 2015 at the 2015 meeting of the National Council on Radiation Protection, NCRP 2015. The subject is mostly Mr. Jonathan Edwards, the Director of Radiation Protection for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. It starts with my questions after Mr. Edwards' initial talk on updating radiation protection standards. My name is Rod Adams. I write Atomic Insights, and my question is for EPA representative. I just had an opportunity to review your proposed rulemaking on in-situ leach mining. Interesting set of rules that said we're going to protect non-potable reservoirs that are already contaminated, and we're not sure how much it's going to cost. And we're not sure what the benefit's going to be, but we think we really need to do this. So can you explain how that falls into your description of, and besides that, all uranium mining active in the U.S. right now is in-situ leach, and probably the rules, if imposed, would eliminate uranium mining in the U.S.?
I will say I don't recall that exact language in the proposed rule, And I would prefer not to get into any great detail on each one of the individual rules, but the notion is that the water out west, particularly out west, is a valuable commodity, and that there is a lot of unknown about the practice of in-situ leaching over the last several years. There's a scarce amount of data that that water deserves to be protected. If you look at the rule, it proposes establishment of a baseline prior to the operations. And so the goal is not necessarily to take an exempted aquifer that is contaminated above what are accepted drinking water levels and somehow take that contaminated aquifer down to drinking levels. That's not the goal of it. The goal is to be able to restore that aquifer to its original conditions as best as possible after the in-situ recovery.
Thank you. After the session was over, I had the opportunity to go up and talk to Mr. Edwards directly. I had made it very obvious that I had a recorder in my hand and captured that conversation and had some interesting side interruptions to the conversation that you'll enjoy while you're listening.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
So,
I'm a former submariner myself.
Oh, are you really?
Oh, yeah. Engineer on Von Steuben.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, I was on Spadefish, fast stack out of Norfolk.
I've read that the rules.
Yeah.
Proposed rule. One of the things that didn't seem clear to me is you all don't seem to understand that the only thing that the ISR mine is adding to the
is
bicarbonate.
Yeah.
Okay, and now you're going to impose a 33-year-long monitoring after closure, and most of the aquifers are not usable anymore.
True.
So why are we protecting non-usable water? I mean, now, and when you think about that, think about the rules that you've imposed on fracking and what kind of post-monitoring or post-closure monitoring does a fracker have to do when they add a whole bunch more stuff into the environment. And you know, it seems like it's purposely aimed at attacking a very small but important little industry.
I want to give you my card real quick.
Yeah,
you're 192 people.
Yeah.
They cite my paper and they're doing it wrong.
Oh, are they?
They're taking an opposite conclusion from a paper I wrote on uranium mining.
Really?
The 192 rulemakings. And not only that, they're not following the Scientific Advisory Board subcommittee's recommendation for that 192 rulemaking.
Can you send me an email?
Sure, you got a card. I'll send it to you right away.
Send me an email.
I'm interested.
Citing your paper.
The way they cite it, they're doing exactly the opposite.
And how you feel it was improperly cited. Yeah,
absolutely.
Send me that, and I will get that to our rule committee.
I've been really disappointed in that because I wrote that paper specifically detailing what happens, and right now we're working on a paper that details how the risk changes pre and post mining, because of the nature of the mining, that you can't restore the aquifer to the original condition after mining.
Right.
But we can restore the risk, right? Or we can at least minimize the risk. And based on our calculations so far, we haven't published it yet, but based on our calculations, the risks actually change. The cancer risk goes down, the nephrotoxicity risk goes up a little bit. So it's a dynamic thing.
Let me give you my information. I'm sorry, for some reason I don't have my card. I thought I had cards in it, but I'd really like to hear this.
And you know, we crossed paths in the Navy too.
Oh, is that right?
Huh? Here, let me.
I'd like a copy of your paper too.
Oh wow, you work with.
I don't work with anybody. I'm a writer.
Oh, you're a writer?
Yeah. I publish Atomic Insights.
Okay.
And I'm also a former Navy guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, retired in 2010.
Thank you. No, not me. I just got out.
Yeah.
That was the end of it.
Yeah, if you want, here.
Thank you.
Why don't you send me a...
Hi, I forget. I've just been appointed to EPA's radiation.
Oh, the
copy of paper.
Really? Yeah. Is that right?
Okay.
I hope you don't mind if I just write my contact information down.
No, of course not.
Really? Oh, that's great.
So I thought we have
some interesting interactions.
Who subscribes to your writings?
Next few years to engage you guys.
Got about 20,000 readers a month.
No kidding. Yeah. Hey, that's good.
Yep.
Mining's hot out near me.
Where are you? Out in Wyoming? Are you out in
the I own property in Wyoming, but I'm actually at Colorado State University.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember you from the SAB, actually, Tom. When you obviously were...
I was there, me and Thomas Borch.
2000.
Me and Thomas Borch were there.
If you think
water's valuable in the West, natural resources are also valuable in the West.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with
that. Well, they want to mine under my property. Under
definitely
my property.
Send me the info on your paper and how you think it's not being cited properly. And I will get that to the work group, and we will...
Who's working on that issue, technically?
We had to change the work group lead due to a change in assignments. It was a woman named Andrea Cherpy. I don't know if you remember from the SCB. We now have a new woman in. Ingrid Rosenkrantz is her name.
Okay.
And she's very good. She cares. She cares about input. That's why I want to hear their.
It'd be great to have these people. Yeah. You know, if they're interested, they can feel free to contact me or Thomas Borch, any of the members of the SAB.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain would be very happy to work with her one on one to help develop these things. You know, we'd be really happy to work with her because we realize that most people have never actually been to a uranium mine.
That's true.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the people who are writing regulations live out here, and the environment's different here. People are different.
But it's funny because when I was an undergrad in Rhode Island, doing a project at Rhode Island Hospital, it was my first radiation-related project. The health physicist in charge of the hospital health physics got a call because he was also on call for the state.
Yeah.
There was a problem with radon levels in the shower at a nursing home in southern Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And it turned out that there's uranium under there.
Oh, there's a lot of uranium there.
Under Narragansett Bay. And, you know, it's not just out west.
I know, but... The mining, you don't do a lot of mining in Narragansett for uranium.
No, they don't.
We wanted to, or at least some of us wanted to mine uranium in Virginia, but...
There was going to be a mine in Virginia, but I don't know what's happened with that.
Right now it's illegal in the state.
I think the state passed a law.
No. Well, the state passed a law back in the 1980s to put a moratorium
until they
produce regulations. And now they've refused to produce regulations.
Hmm.
So it's 119 million pounds of uranium
sitting
in the ground in a readily accessible area.
Your point on the 30-year point, I don't know if you, Tom, were able to pull this, but part of the reason that's in there is it's tied to the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, the RCRA law, and there's some language in the law that says that some of the protections under 192 have to mirror the protections under RCRA, and that's where that 30-year period comes from. But like the RCRA folks, we tried to come up with a way that can be shortened if stability is demonstrated and you got the right modeling. I realize that, you know, you think about 33-year period. It's long time after an operation.
Yeah, and for the amount of, uranium mining is a small industry. There's not a lot of it going around. Mm-hmm. But it's a very important part of the nuclear power industry to have the raw material you need. And those rules, with that almost undefinable liability, will absolutely prevent people from mining uranium. And in fact, I believe the way the rules are written is it will force every operating mine to shut down as soon as the rule is implemented. Because it says that you don't need to adhere to the monitoring as long as you're in recovery before the rule gets implemented. But if you're still operating, you are already agreeing to the 33-year monitoring. Yeah.
Did you get a chance, did you get a chance to submit comments?
Still
have a chance.
Until April 27th.
We will probably extend the comment period. I definitely encourage you to submit comments.
I would have gone to the
Washington, D.C. hearing?
Meeting, but the meeting was on the same day as a regulatory information conference by the NRC.
Yeah, and I don't know what
the biggest annual event in the nuclear industry, and you had them on the same day.
Yeah, I didn't realize
and
there was
one was
conflict.
And one was in Rockville, and one was in Crystal City.
Yeah.
So I couldn't
I don't know what your reasons are for traveling, but we are thinking about doing two more hearings, one in Texas and one in Wyoming. Nonetheless, though, do give us your comments. And we do take them seriously.
Really. I will.
We don't just kind of shove them something.
I will give them. I'm also encouraging lots of others to give them because, it's literally the rule says we cannot calculate a benefit. We don't know what the cost is. We assume, and they assume the cost down to three significant digits. Mm-hmm. Something they don't know.
It's a challenge we have in a lot of our environmental rules. It's really hard to quantify the environmental benefits of the protection. It really is a challenge.
Well, in some cases, if you can't quantify it, if you can't find anybody's going to be hurt, then why are you doing it?
Well, again, the notion was not to drive the aquifers back to somehow drinking water quality, but to at least restore them to their baseline, because you have mobilized a lot of metals and a lot of elements of concern or isotopes of concern.
But if nobody's using the water, who cares?
The fear is what
it's all material that's already in the ground.
Rod, what we've heard from the environmental groups is the fear that eventually those aquifers will be needed, will be required, and somehow
they will all have to be treated. And if you have to treat water anyway, I mean, you've distilled water before.
Sure.
It doesn't matter what's in it. You have to take it all out. No matter if you add a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that, if you've got to clean it anyway, it's exactly the same process, the same cost to get it to DI water standards or drinking water standards. Mm-hmm. So what difference does it make if it somehow gets a little bit extra stuff in it, and then 50 years from now when you want to use it, you got to clean it up, okay? What difference does it make? What improvement have you done except put a business out of business?
Send us your comments. We'll weigh them. There are folks that feel on the other side that they've come in, they've disturbed an aquifer. It may not be drinking water standards yet. Maybe it's close, but somehow it is an exempted aquifer. But should the business be allowed to leave it in a worse condition than when they started? I mean, so we hear that side of it too. I hear you.
Compare it to right now, if somebody drills a natural gas well, they just leave everything in the ground. The pipes, everything. I mean, most of the time, in New York, there's a whole bunch of wells, they're not even properly closed.
Pull themselves and run, right?
Okay, because it's all under, quote, state regulation. But that's a completely different standard, and we're competing in the same market for energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, in other words, if you force nuclear out, you end up not protecting the environment because you force more consumption of coal, oil, and natural gas.
Well, I take your points. I really do. And I encourage you to submit.
All right.
And we do take it seriously.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.